You're listening to Girovagando Kilometer Zero by The Cycling Podcast.
Many things have changed over our decade of covering the Giro d'Italia on the ground, but certain voices hopefully also add a comforting familiarity to the thrill of the vicarious ride around Italy.
But my hometown is Torre del Greco, exactly halfway between Naples and Pompeii.
This is the tapas.
Our modest mission has been and remains to not only chronicle race events, but to convey some of the texture of the Giro. For that, we need voices from the inner sanctum, in the peloton, team cars and hotels. Rich voices, entertaining voices, belonging to those who, like us, recognise that the Grand Tours are above all epic sagas, exercises in storytelling.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, he came one stage and the climb became very
Matt White was for years the head director sportif at Green Edge. In that first Giro we covered, end to end, his was the voice of reason and perspective after his rider Esteban Chavez lost the Maglia Rosa on the penultimate day to champion-elect Vincenzo Nibali.
None at all. Yeah, and I agree, it was disappointing. You know, we were so close to winning a Grand Tour, but 12 hours, 24 hours later...
Over subsequent years, Matt's insights have become one of the motifs in the soundtrack of the cycling springtime.
Look, he's going to have... Look, a stage like that, the Valverde...
A year ago, to almost everyone's surprise, he parted ways with Jaco Alula on the eve of the Grande Partenza in Albania. Thankfully, this year he's back in the race convoy with Movistar, a sort of de facto national team for Spain, the country where Matt has resided for several years. Long a resolutely Hispanic institution, Movistar have for several years been trying to modernise and internationalise, and Max Chandri has been part of that effort, just as he's also been a fixture in our Giro podcast.
You're all in a bar, and typical bar in Italy, loud, people sitting
Born
around.
In Derby, England, raised in Tuscany, Italy, Max is the laid-back Matthew McConaughey doppelganger who personifies the style and eleganza that give the Giro and Italy an overlapping allure.
You're always going to pull out pasta, you're always going to pull out olive oil, you're always going to pull out a bit of spicy, you know, a bit of peperoncino, anything you can then...
Having learned that Matt and Max would be paired together in the Movistar cockpit for the first time at the Giro, we knew exactly what to do next. Infiltrate that team car, switch on a recorder, and capture some of the hopefully dynamic duo's in-race interactions.
Some teams are going to have to step in.
Muy bien, chicos, muy bien.
The stage we chose was the first in Italy, in the deep south, from Catanzara to Cosenza. And what a choice it turned out to be. As the peloton approached the only major climb on the route, Cozzotuno, Movistar surged to the front. Soon, under their pressure, the peloton had been completely detonated, with not only sprinters like Paul Magnier and Jonathan Milan, but also a Tour de France winner like Egan Bernal, blasted like shrapnel out of the back. The plan seemed clear. The Venezuelan Orluis Aular was on paper the fastest man among the 20 or so riders that went over the summit in the leading group.
Downhill here, and Orluis.
Now Movistar just had to finish the job. No easy task, with multiple Giro stage winners like UAE's Jonathan Narvaez in the group and Giulio Ciccone on the hunt for the bonus seconds that would give him the pink jersey. In the Movistar patrol car, our Dukes of Hazzard knew that opportunity knocked.
On the wheel, very good, very good.
Ciccone's second place to gain 4 seconds at the Red Bull sprint meant that a top three finish on the line would give him the Maglia Rosa. But as the group barreled towards Cosenza, Matt and Max's eyes were on another potential guastafeste, or party pooper. Meanwhile, Brian Nygaard and I were watching events unfold from a supermarket car park. Brian, how many in that group? 20, 25?
Yeah, something like that. It's definitely been made a lot of selection. Very reduced group.
Race about a kilometre away from where we are. We're in the Decathlon car park, the co-op car park, next to the inflatable giant, inflatable bottle of Pinot Grigio. And no sign of the... Where's the inflatable toilet rolls, huh? Brian, I noticed that Movistar got two men left. We were just talking in the car. There could be a late attacker as well. Everyone's talking about the fastest riders in the bunch. But
yeah, I mean, everyone has their own cars to play in this one, don't they, Daniel? This will be... Yeah, there'll be so many different options for a winner here. I mean, and also we'll... As we've already probably been speculating, there'll be a jersey change. There's so much up for grabs today.
Ciccone and Narvaez. Aula holding off the Italian for now, pushing for the line. Narvaez, the UAE rider, coming with a charge, but it's Aula who's going to hold them off. Movistar take it with Aula. It's going to be close on the line. Narvaez with a charge, but it's Narvaez who gets ahead of Aula. Giulio Ciccone in third. He timed it brilliantly, and Jonathan Narvaez has done it again. He loves
it. It had ended in disappointment.
Narvaez win. We were second.
Not that when we caught up with him 20 minutes later, Matt was completely deflated.
Almost calling you Max there. Matt, already given you 10 for... You said, what did you say? McDonald's achievement. What did you say?
No, in Australia, they give the kids who try their best to get it done, and McDonald's encouraged them. So we tried, and full respect for the boys for the effort they put in today.
The following morning in Praia Mare, whatever disappointment that lingered had given way to the optimism you need in this job, their job, that of the Grand Tour Director Sportif, for whom hope springs eternal. Many things have changed over the course of their combined 7 or 8 decades in this sport, first as riders and now directors, but some principles, as I was about to find out, remain as relevant today as they were decades ago.
I want to talk early in the Giro while you're still getting on.
Oh, off.
Before the relationship deteriorates, I know how these things go.
How do you know?
Have you worked on races already?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Who's first? Who's driving? First director.
Putting it together.
Career comparison. Maximilian.
Volver.
Claro que sí.
Are you doing your research now?
Maximilian Chandri won in your head-to-head battles. 82 times you raced against each other. Maximilian Chandri triumphed how many times, or what percentage of times out of 82?
What, bike races?
Yeah, bike races.
About 78.
91.
I don't even know. How many races you win? We're counting 2 World Tour.
We'll get to this in a minute.
Okay. Yep.
91% max you won. Beat Matthew White. There
it was a little bit of a crossover, wasn't there? Not too much of a crossover.
I won 91% of the times.
When we raced against each other, which we weren't really, were we? Yeah.
82 times. But there was one occasion, a famous occasion. Max, your stage win in Tour of Switzerland, 1996. Max, you were 11th that day. I don't know if you were in some kind of break together. What happened that day, Max?
That was, was 96. That was... 99. I was in Vinnie Calderola. 96, I wasn't even professional. I remember because I won. There was a big break at the start. We actually won Tour of Switzerland with Casa Grande. And there was a big break, early, and maybe 15 or plus riders. And then I tacked at the bottom of the last climb, and then a group of 5 caught me, and then I hit them again inside the last K. But there was a big composition of riders in that break. That's all I remember.
So Max was 11th. Max was just—I think he gained time on the main bunch, but you know, just do Max things behind. Yeah. Just you know,
what team? What team were you in 99?
99. FDJ.
FDJ.
Yes, you are.
FDJ.
Do you remember racing against each other much?
I remember talking to Max in the bunch. Yeah. But like I said, when did you retire? What year?
2004.
So I went 3 more years. Max started 5 or 6 before I started.
Yeah. You lived in Tuscany as well for a certain. Did you for a period?
Yeah. When I turned professional with Amore Vita, first lived in Lunata, at the back of the Fanini
villa,
with 7 amateurs and 2 professionals, with 1 bathroom, and then I moved out to the coast after the Giro, out to La Spezia, and stayed there a couple of years.
Were you allowed to train with the Tuscan cycling aristocracy, the Chandri group, or was that?
I did join the group there with Max. I remember a couple of times with Rolf. And half of the team I was in lived within a 15-20k radius. Yeah. That Amore Vita team in 1998. A lot of them were from Tuscany. So there was groups crisscrossing all over the roads. But I learnt the roads around there first, and then it's the same roads from La Spezia, but from the other side. You know, depending on how you do longer rides over Abetone down into it, or if you do flat roads down the coast towards Pisa. But Oh, I really love my time in Italy.
Yeah. Max, Matt's obviously from Sydney. Your experiences with Sydney, relationship with Sydney?
Olympics. The Olympics in Sydney, yeah. The Olympics in Sydney, I did Down Under quite a few times. Mm. I think 2000, maybe my first or second time. So I did Down Under, yeah. Adelaide, you know. And Sydney Olympics, we're now training somewhere that you remembered where. British national team was somewhere.
I can't remember where. Yeah, down in southern, towards Wollongong, yeah. Down the southern, yeah. Royal National Park, that area. Yeah, because the teams, depending how long you're in, actually, and then...
I went there like quite a few days earlier.
Some teams train in Canberra, the AOS, and then other teams were located in southern parts of Sydney as well, because Sydney, then and now, is not the ideal training venue.
Yeah, I remember Bondi Beach.
Yeah, Bondi Beach.
There was like an Oakley house there. I remember going there too a couple of times.
Yeah, that was... But yeah. Yeah, there was. There wasn't there.
That's a bit of memories I have.
Well, the course was through Centennial Park there, down towards Bronte Beach, which is the one beach south or two. Tamarama is not a patrol beach. Oh, Tamarama, then Bronte. So it was a eastern suburbs city circuit, and it was a good one. It was obviously won by Jan Ulrich. Mm. Well, remember the three telecom riders.
Yeah.
Vinokurov, Cloden, and Ulrich went away. I can't remember when.
Yep.
And then
Rudy Pevenage directing operations from behind a bush, I think, somewhere.
Well, Jan was incredibly strong that year as well, wasn't he? He was leading the welter that year, and left the welter pretty much to prepare for the Olympics, and it worked. He won the road race, and he medaled also in the time trial as well. So I do remember that. And I remember Sydney waking up in the morning and it was teeming down with rain. Yeah. And then by the actual time the race started, it was it came out the weather like we're in now. Yeah. And it actually got really, really muggy. Yeah. Because Sydney in that time of year, it's spring, you can get anything. But the roads were perfectly dry in the course. But there was a big weather change that day, I do remember.
So you're here as Direct Sportifs. Let's talk Division of Labour. Well, before we talk about Division of Labour, Max... Whitey's, what would you say Whitey's big strengths are as a Direct Sportif?
I think he's got an amazing memory. So, you know, he relates back to stuff what happened, and he can always, you know, this finish happened that stage happened this. So that's something, you know, we've just been actually a week together now. So it's not like kind of we know each other. His Spanish is fucked up like mine.
Oh, I heard some of it. don't worry. I heard some of it yesterday. Bellon shared some of it with me.
Muy bien, Nelson. Muy bien, Iner. Hay siete curvas en el último kilómetro. Siete. El primero es a izquierda.
So we're both pretty up in Spanish. We talk in Spanish and we don't understand each other, so we switch to English.
You're fluent in Spitaliano, though, aren't you?
Spitaliano, yeah. That's my Spanish and it's Spanish. So, you know, we're trying to get there, but more or less communication gets through, you know, so that's... So, you know, he's got, you know, his history is like right down to everything, you know. I mean, I'm a little bit more naive in terms of, you know, I can't remember races very well, what I did especially. And,
vice versa, Max's strength.
Well, I think the big one is, as well, is, and Max has carried that strength over from his race days to now, is the reason Max had so much success as a rider, because he could read a bike race.
Yeah.
And yeah, some people qualities and directors are different than others, and I think the way that Max sees a race as well is probably the same way as you saw it as a bike rider, and that's in the details.
Yeah.
And I think that's lost in a lot of sports directors these days.
Thank you, mate. That's a good compliment. Thank you.
What you did as a bike rider wasn't by luck, mate.
No, it wasn't true. It's true.
Give me an example, Whitey, if you can think of something. What details are we talking about?
For example, today. Today, the weather looks quite inclement.
Yeah.
So, Max is already thinking yesterday how we can also prepare the staff with bottles, with jackets, details that, okay, yeah, every team has apps, everyone has it, but you've got to take real information and translate that to something that works with your group.
Yeah.
And people, real racers understand that.
Yeah.
You know, and what applied 30 years ago for racing... Some things never change. Yes, our sport has changed with data and numbers and the way you approach a race, but other parts, cycling's still cycling. Yeah. And you've got to be able to, we're standing here now in sunshine, I'm dare saying an hour or two time we won't be. Yeah. You know, so that doesn't change. And I think the mentality that me and Max do share is that we both understand the way cycling was with racing, but also it's changing. We've adapted our knowledge and our skills to racing in 2026.
Mm. Yeah. No, I'd say numbers, but I don't like to depend on numbers, you know. I mean, I use them as a bonus because, you know, you go down to data, you go down to all of, you know, your Strava records, your courses here, there, but it's still a bike rider on a bike, you know, and you have to have that feeling of what's going to happen and trying to interpret, understand, look, listen. Yeah. And listening also is very important. You know, yeah. People just kind of pull out sentences, but, you know, they don't listen, you know. So I think listening and looking, yeah, observing is a key thing, you know, just to keep that part alive, you know, of cycling, what we like. And I think that's important in both of us, you know, because...
For sure. I think the big change that in both mine and Max's directing days is we have the availability of a lot more resources now. Now, when we both started as directors, you know, it was, you know, you'd have two directors at a bike race, you wouldn't have a coach there, you wouldn't have a data analyst, all those things that every World Tour team has now. You know, and then basically the network of people that you can rely on now is bigger. So, you know, people are there for support, and, you know, our job's easier at times, but more complicated at times.
I was going to say, it can be problematic sometimes, can't it?
That information.
Yeah, I know, for sure. You have to, you know, just get the key things out, obviously. You're not going to... Because then you become another number guy, kind of, you know. So you just have to filter stuff and just go to, like, essential parts, break it down, what can happen, prepare for stuff. I don't know. It's just, like, personally, I have a vision, you know. I was trying to say... to Whitey the other day, it's like I have a vision of the Giro, but I just literally can see it in front of me, and I try to get it out and put it into blocks, you know, into smaller blocks as weeks, and then we break it down. It can be a 2-day, it can be a 3-day, it can be a phase with a rest day, and just try and lay it out and keep it simple.
Yeah.
Nobody does it better than Regent Seven Seas Cruises. Enjoy all-inclusive, unrivaled luxury with unlimited shore excursions, indulgent cuisine, personalized service, and more aboard spacious all-suite ships. Visit rssc.com to experience the unrivaled.
Oh, yeah. Some teams are going to have to step in. You have to ride to the finish.
Yep, we're committed.
We've committed.
So yesterday we all lauded the way you planned yesterday and the way you implemented it as well. But just tell us how... So is that the evening before, after the stage, you know, we always see in hotel lobbies the direct sportive sort of together after a stage. So after the previous day's stage, is that where it happens? Or is it all... Was yesterday one that you planned months ago?
Well, there's stages that you go into the race... with an idea of what you would like to happen, but that's not always reality as well. You've got to adapt stage by stage, like Max just said. Things change in one moment. Yeah, you know, one crash the other day changed this bike race. So an idea we had in the race was, yeah, it's a stage that suited us, but you've got to adapt it to the current situation, and that changes one with lots of things, weather, who's in the lead, who's out of the bike race. So yeah, it's a process of adapting an original plan to actually what's in reality the day when you're as close as possible to the event, because weather changes in 24 hours, leaders, people get sick, people crash, all those sort of things that you've got to factor out. So it's definitely a process that starts a long way out but narrows in. The final one is even the morning of the race.
I think you know just looking at Orlu, that went into the Giro last year, did a couple good results, you know, in the first two or three days. And condition he has an incredible condition. I think he came a little slightly deception out of Bulgaria. And we said, he has an incredible condition. I said, let's try it, you know. Let's try it today, and why not? Let's stick it on the climb. And he gave us, you know, he gave us great feedback. Everybody gave us great feedback in terms of using the numbers, they could keep up certain numbers, and we just went for it, you know. And then obviously being in front is like, you know, they drive from each other, you know. Once the team is in front, they get excited, they like it, and they're able to control it with all the guys like Nelson, you know, just pacing it in the right way and bringing the guys together. So yeah, we owed something like that to a guy like Orlu.
Is there anything in common that you both, I mean, you're a similar-ish age, is there anything that you both sort of rail against about whether it's the current generation, the younger generation, inside the way cycling's changed, something you've identified already that you both just do not have much time for?
Well, not, I think rail against, I think where we see things exactly the same is a day like today. The riders these days are thinking, obviously, aerodynamics. They're thinking nutrition, all those things, which you have to think. But on a day like today, when weather can have a big effect, the guys are not thinking the same way we're thinking as far as staying warm. Yeah. And at the end of the day, you take one jewel, what's the difference having a jacket in your pocket? You know, if you get cold, some guys, that's their day.
Yeah. You know? I said, keep a gel in your pocket. It's a lifesaver, you know. Yeah. You have gloves on, you're going down to the sand, it's twisty as the sand, right up to another little climb. It's a 3K climb. It's nothing on the profile, but it's just 3K climb, and that gel can save your life. So,
Riders aren't thinking like that, are they?
So you go back to basics, and then basics sometimes save you.
Yeah, it's very easy to imagine that. Them all sitting in the bus looking at, I don't know, what their FTP was yesterday. You know.
Me and Max, we still swear by the Garibaldi.
Yeah. you guys still think Torriani's the race director.
The director will have this in his pocket. I mean, look what I have in my pocket. Like a bike rider.
The Garibaldi is the Bible of this race. Okay? So there's other tools we use, but it is what it is, isn't it?
That's, he agrees with you.
It is what it is, isn't it? Yeah. So, and I think most riders in most teams use the Garibaldi as a book, as a doorstop, or a souvenir to take home in the suitcase. You know,
you're going to be handing out copies of the Gazzetta for the mountain stages, sticking up their jerseys on the top.
No, we have good jackets these days. But hey, if you're stuck with that jacket, it's better than nothing. Yeah, it's better than nothing. Yeah. So I think we're from a generation where I think we did a lot more of our own research because obviously the technology didn't exist, did it, Mac? We didn't have.
No.
Whereas riders now, I think sometimes some of them rely too much on the information they're given and don't look for themselves. Because at the end of the day, when we're in a race, we haven't got eight channels. Mm. It's one channel for everyone, or we have a meeting. We don't have eight separate meetings. Mm. We have one meeting. So what a sprinter is looking for is sometimes totally different than a GC rider. Yeah. So I think that's the mentality that you want to develop in a team. At the end of the day, we're here to help, but at the end of the day, the responsibility of key points is up to them as well. You know, radios don't always work. Cars can break down. Lots of things can happen.
Yeah.
So you have to be responsible, and that's the mindset that you want in a team.
Very last thing, chaps. Max is not only a bike racing oracle, but he's also a bit of an oracle in terms of imparting pearls of cultural wisdom, culinary wisdom about Italy. Any of those flying around as he's?
Potenza is a code of city in Italy.
So it's also got one of the longest escalators in the world.
I did not know that. Escalator?
Yeah, well, there's a whole system. There's a whole system from the bottom of the city to
the top.
Yeah, it's one of the, if not the longest in the world.
Yeah, right.
Escalator, electric ones?
Yeah.
They're probably not working.
I'll turn them on today, Max.
They're probably WD-40 on them. They'll start working. Yeah. Hey, that's good.
Anything about how to eat your pasta or anything like that?
No, but I love Italian food, and I do have a general rule for myself is I tried to only eat Italian food in one country, and this is the one.
Do you know what my one is? Always look for spelling mistakes on menus of Italian restaurants in other countries, and if there's any spelling mistake, then never go in.
I definitely do not look at spelling mistakes. I'm looking for what's on the menu and what's going to float my boat.
Muy bien, chicos, muy bien. Olu, copy, olu. They've sent Sabera back for Derek G. If someone does a late attack, we've got no one to react.
We did the damage, so, you know, we didn't.
You can't
do it. We could have had two cars, but we have one car. It's better than nothing. Some teams are going to have to step in.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.